much. Professor Christos Pantelis is the head of the Melbourne Neuropsychiatry Centre at the University of Melbourne, and they have this research being announced this morning. Christos, good morning to you.
Good morning, John, and good morning to your listeners.
What have you studied and what have you learned?
John, what we've done here is to work closely with colleagues at the National Institute of Mental Health in Washington, D.C., where they collected data on children with schizophrenia. It's quite an uncommon condition in children, but what they also did was to collect brain scans on the children, but also on their unaffected siblings, the brothers and sisters of these children, and as well as in normally developing children. What we found was that there were abnormalities in brain connectivity, so the way that the brain connects different regions. And that was apparent right at a very early age, around 12, was seen in the children with schizophrenia, but also in their siblings who didn't have the disorder.
The same problem in both?
Correct. So this abnormality in brain connectedness was abnormal in both groups and different from the normally developing children. What was really interesting, though, was when you followed these children over time and over the adolescent period, which is a critical period of brain development, the children with schizophrenia continued to show this abnormality until they reached adulthood, but the unaffected brothers and sisters normalized, got back to the normal trajectory, if you like, by age 16.
So, to put it into lay terms, you can have siblings who have the same problem of connectivity.
Correct.
Some develop schizophrenia, some don't.
Correct.
We don't quite know why, but it suggests then that this connectivity problem is a precondition to schizophrenia.
It suggests that it's a marker, potentially, of the disorder. The interesting question is why did the siblings who show this abnormality not develop the illness? And why did they normalize by mid-adolescence, in effect? And that's led us to really start thinking about not only risk factors, which is what we tend to think about when we look at these disorders, but also what are the resilience factors? What are the factors that might protect such children from developing such a serious condition?
All right. Now, these aren't twin studies.
No. So they're children who've been diagnosed with schizophrenia. And then they're unaffected brothers and sisters, not necessarily twins.
Okay, and this has been done both here and in the States?
The data was collected in the States, in fact, because it's such a rare condition. We don't see it very often here in Australia. So I've been looking at some recent figures, John, and it's interesting that if you looked at the one-year incidence, probably around 50 children across Australia would be developing this condition. What they did in the US was to fly in families and their children from all over America into Washington, D.C. They would house them, treat them, and also undertake the brain scanning as well as cognitive and other testing.
Okay,
and now, this was over a 20-year period.
Okay, and this connectivity problem that's arisen, is that also observable in adults who develop schizophrenia?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Indeed, most of my work is in early onset schizophrenia in adolescence and early adulthood and also in patients with more severe illness later on. And what we've looked at is white matter connectedness, if you like, across the brain. The white matter are the tracts that connect different brain regions. It's like the information superhighway, if you like. What we found was that similar abnormalities were detected in patients with adult schizophrenia, but it was more extensive. It included areas in a number of brain regions.
Okay, so what we've got is we're wondering what's the switch here. People who have this connectivity problem, some do and some don't. So we've got to start working through whether it's nature or nurture, whether it's diet or some other intervention that makes the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's certainly a complex disorder because we've been looking at the genetics of the disorder, and that's certainly not simple. We've been looking at environmental factors, and more recently we've been looking at the interaction between genes and environment. The genetics is certainly interesting, and one of the largest genetic studies that I was involved with was published in Nature last year and demonstrated a number of hits suggesting that it's a polygenic disorder. Now, what that means is that it's not just one gene. It's a number of genes, a constellation, if you like. And it's all of these genes acting together. But it's not just genetics. It's also the influence of the environment. And here we can start to look at risk and resilience factors. Indeed, we've been looking at adolescents who are prone to other conditions as well, such as depression. Some nice work by Sarah Whittle in my group has looked at risk for depression in children and followed them into adolescence and found that a good nurturing environment is actually protective to brain structure over time.
So I guess, like so much research, it then demands and commands further research as you whittle down the areas that will provide you with some answers.
Exactly. One of the nice things about this research is that it brought together different disciplines. So Andrew Zaleski, who's the lead author, is actually an electrical engineer. So we're looking at connectedness in the brain from an engineering perspective, which I think is a very nice way. So the links with engineering at University of Melbourne have been fabulous.
Which brings me back to David Thodey, the former boss of Telstra, who's just been appointed chair of the board of CSIRO, who trained as an anthropologist, which just goes to show that your fundamental skills and your basic learning can take you who knows where, and we shouldn't pigeonhole people.
And bringing disciplines together is an absolutely fabulous way forward.
And thinking laterally, as long as you learn how to learn.
Exactly.
That's crucially what it's about. Christos, fascinating, fascinating indeed. So we will see undoubtedly in the future that this research will bear more fruit. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you very much.
Professor Christos Pantelis, head of the Melbourne Neuropsychiatry Centre at the University of Melbourne.